are listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast
by fans from the iubase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
Welcome. We are recording this on Monday, February 17th, 2020. For the first time, we are doing this podcast all together from our latest stop on our southern trip, Starkville, Mississippi. I am Carl James, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, the creator of iubase.com, Josh Bennett, and the man who single-handedly got D1 Baseball's number 35 2020 MLB draft prospect, Cole Henry, to balk at the box. Chris Feeney.
It did happen. It happened. We have proof. You could go on the replay of the game and see it.
The Indiana Hoosiers started the 2020 season this weekend at Alex Box Stadium in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The Hoosiers lost the opening day to the Tigers 8-1. Despite the balk, LSU's Cole Henry was as good as advertised.
It's a good book. What?
Limiting the Hoosiers to 3 hits and no runs while striking out 8 in 4 innings of work.
You know, honestly, I thought we did a good job. We had him at like 72 pitches through 4 innings, and we competed really well. That's an elite fastball. You know, it's got real properties to the glove side. It's like a 2,500 plus RPM fastball, which is above major league average, and to the arm side, it's got real horizontal action. So he's got a real fastball and good stuff. You know, for us to continue to compete the way that we did throughout that, I thought we did a fine job. We just have to be able to finish more at bats. The elevated pitch counts are good, but I still felt like we expanded up several times and we went down several times on pitches that were balls out of the hand. And so you do that enough and you put yourself in a tough spot, no matter if it's a 6 or a 7 pitch at bat, which is a really quality at bat. We still had opportunities to finish at bats.
Hoosier starter Tommy Summer surrendered 5 runs via 2 multi-run homers in the first and third innings. Summer's runs were given up in bunches as he followed up each of those innings with a hitless and a scoreless frame. Summer struck out 5 Tigers in 4 innings of work.
I just didn't feel like he finished pitches as well as normally does. Some pitches left up. And, you know, he's done a really good job throughout the course of the preseason running up to it. And he'll make adjustments. But he just was up, you know, kind of throughout the start. And those pitches were elevated. And when he's elevated, he's not quite as effective. So he battled. He's a tough dude and has given us a chance to win a lot of ball games over his career. And I'm confident he will into the future again.
The Tigers controlled the game the rest of the way to an easy 8-1 win. Hoosiers Grant Maciocchi and Matt Litwicki both left the game with injuries. We do have no official word yet on the extent of those injuries. Due to the pending rain, the series would conclude with a Saturday doubleheader. This game was more competitive. Gabe Bierman gave up 5 runs, 3 of them earned in 5 innings of work. The Hoosier bats scored 3 off of LSU starter Marceau, including a 2-run bomb off the left field scoreboard by Cole Barr. The Hoosiers got to within 1 in the 8th inning on a Drew Ashley RBI single, but the Tigers would extend the lead in the bottom half and win the game 7-4, despite the Hoosiers out-hitting the Tigers 10-9. Grant Richardson and Elijah Dunham each had 3 hits in the game to pace the Hoosiers. The Hoosiers flipped the script in the final game of the series. Braden Tucker led all pitchers for both teams on the weekend with 6 innings of work. Tucker had a no-hitter going into the 5th inning. His final line was 1 earned run on 4 hits.
Pretty much everything I felt comfortable with, being able to command early and being able to use all my pitches like efficiently and use them for bait, like just swing and miss or getting them in the zone for strikes. And then second was just relying on my defense. Early on, we made a couple mistakes, but it was just like, forget about it and move on.
The Hoosier bats struggled most of the weekend to get hits with runners in scoring position. But that changed in Game 3 with Grant Richardson driving in 4 runs on 2 hits and a walk. For the weekend, Grant had 6 hits total and was rewarded as co-Big Ten Player of the Week.
Honestly, it was my round of BP. I just felt something click, and I was like, all right, I'm going to have a good day. Like, it was, I don't know, it was just as soon as I started swinging, I was like, I'm feeling it. I'm actually just sitting fastball the entire time and just reacting to the off-speed pitches. I mean, the triple that I had in the first game, I was just reacting to it. And then I didn't even know that that last pitch that I homered on was an off-speed pitch. I thought it was a fastball.
Hunter Jesse also added a pair of hits to the effort. Connor Maness struck out 4 in 2 solid innings of relief. After giving up a solo home run, McCade Brown finished off 3 straight Tigers to seal a 7-2 Hoosier win. Well, it was quite a weekend at the box. Chris, besides the balk, what was your Hoosier highlight?
Why besides the balk? That was the highlight. How is that not the highlight? The first guy throws over to first base. I yell balk. All those fans start staring back at me like I'm an idiot. Okay. Not the next pitch. He balks. Legit balk. The ump called it. He flinched. That really should be the highlight. But I'm not, you know, it can't be about the balk. It can't be about. So I'm going to go with Colbar. The bomb off the scoreboard. Being able to cheer for something besides the balk. I mean, it was a bomb, right? I don't care what the LSU fans, oh, it was a home run. So what? No. He crushed it. It was a crush job. It put us on the board. It gave us some hope. It gave us some life. Got to hear the IU fans finally, like, loud and happy, and the dugout exploded, man. That was, hearing that dugout finally get to explode for the first time in a game and a half or whatever it was. Besides the balk, I'll give it to Colbar.
All right. Josh, what's your Hoosier highlight?
You gave Braden Tucker stats. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run the most out of anybody for the whole series. Had a no-hitter through 4. We're down 0-2 on the weekend, and Tucker comes in making his first start. We've had, like we talked about in the preview pod, we have a lot of innings to replace, so, you know, finding a Sunday guy is going to be very important. So for him to come out there and just absolutely dominate a game like that and give us a chance to win and salvage the series, that's my highlight.
Cassidy, what about you?
For me, I have to go with Grant Richardson. I'm going to agree with the Big Ten on this one. To me, he was the player of the weekend. Hit for the cycle over the course of the weekend, and he covered so much territory out in center field. He made some pretty good snags out there. He really tried to put the team on his back when he needed to, and he played very, very well. So I have to give it to Grant.
All right. I'm going to say Connor Maness. The 2 innings that he followed up with Braden Tucker on were really good. 4 strikeouts out of the 6 outs that he got. He had multiple pitches working, including that really nasty 10-6 curveball that he has.
And got in a little trouble. You know, it wasn't all smooth sailing.
Yeah.
He was able to buckle down. That's a big one. I didn't think that's a big one.
But, really felt confident. I mean, he looked like he could have, you know, gone further, but I understood the need to have somebody like McCade get an opportunity to have an appearance in that. But I thought Connor did a really fabulous, solid job. Well, now it's time for Chris to give out this week's Red Belts.
Thanks, Carl. The first edition of Red Belts. These seem pretty obvious. This didn't take much, Carl, I gotta tell you. The Grant Richardson Show was on for the weekend. He earns the hitter red belt. The Alex Dickerson Award red belt goes to Grant Richardson. Hit 500 for the weekend. The guy was out of control. They started walking him towards the end. The LSU pitching staff was walking, not intentionally. It was one of those unintentional jobs. But they didn't even want anything to do with Grant Richardson anymore. But then the guy who came in the ninth, I guess he didn't get the deal. They pitched to him, and he hits a bomb. So, I mean, all 3 games, he was great with the bat. He was putting balls in the gaps. His outs were hard. His outs were deep in the outfield. One out, he hit 402 feet, but he hit it where it's 405, so he didn't get the bomb. Just drove in the run, sack fly. So Grant Richardson gets the Alex Dickerson Award red belt. For the defensive red belt, Grant Richardson, he gets another one. Center field, he was great out in center field. He was covering, just like he was hitting the ball gap to gap for the one belt, he was fielding gap to gap for this belt, coming in good on balls. And something to think about, he was playing games with right field the first game ever freshman, left field the first game ever freshman. He knew that that outfield was his to take care of, and he took care of it. Grant was really impressive out there in center field. He's going to get the Tony Butler Award red belt, so he gets two. And then for the third one, Cass talked about him before. This one is completely obvious as well, I think. Brayden Tucker, six innings. Four no-hit innings. He didn't walk anybody for the six. He got in a little jam in the sixth and got out of it, just gave up the one run. And I had Cass look it up a little bit at the other Airbnb, not the one we're in now, but the one we were in Louisiana. She looked it up for me. He had three different innings that were single-digit pitches. So less than 10 pitches, three separate innings. Now, again, I'm not the stats guy, but I got to say that's pretty impressive. For him to be go through the LSU lineup for three separate innings, less than 10 pitches. So I believe it was around 65, 67 total. That could be wrong. I think that was around what it was. But either way, Tucker gets the Joey Donato pitching red belt for this week. And obviously, they're the only ones with belts. Next week, we'll give out some more. We'll keep the tally going and see who gets the awards.
Hey, Carl, we've got mail.
All right, mail. Just what I wanted. All right, it's mailbag time. All right, I think we're going to have this first one go to Cassidy. Cassidy, Randy from Baton Rouge asks, what was your favorite part of the box? Actually, I think we're all going to take one of these. Yeah. So, Cass first.
For me, the thing that really stood out about the box and being there was just how knowledgeable the fan base really is. They know baseball. They love baseball. And they love talking baseball, whether that's with fellow LSU fans or whether it's with visiting fans. We had so many great conversations with fans, with staff. It was really such a great time being able to interact with a fan base that really does know and love baseball.
Chris?
For me, it was probably just the sight lines, having an upper deck. Like, it was just like a Major League Stadium. I really felt like I was in at an event, at a real stadium, the way they built it. There wasn't a bad seat in the joint. Now, I didn't walk out to where the kids were sitting out in right field. I didn't walk all the way there, but I pretty much walked the rest of the stadium at some point or another throughout the three games. And it was great. I even got upstairs with the media pass. Got upstairs, walked through the skyboxes, got some nice pictures. I mean, it was basically, it's an upper deck. And it's so many nice views wherever you went. The SRO was set up so good. The way the box is set up, is to me, it's just a perfect environment for the game.
Josh?
Well, I don't want to just hold it to the box. I want to talk about just the people of Baton Rouge and New Orleans in general. It was unbelievable. Just the hospitality that they had. We were on standing room only up against kind of the wall back there, and some people, younger actually kids, had tickets right behind us. And we had some conversations back and forth, some playful conversations, but they were very welcoming. And then actually, on Saturday when we got there, this guy had seats up in the suite also, and he waited. We showed up a few minutes late, and he was down there within like 30 seconds and said, hey, you have these four seats for the day.
That's cool.
So they just, they gave their seats up for us. The ushers, I felt like we personally knew all of them. Mm-hmm. By the end of the weekend, or, 2 days, it was a crammed weekend, but, they would come up and, hey, do you need anything? You enjoying the weather? How many people did we have?
The guy with the mustache. He was great. Yeah. Mustache. Yes. Mustache was an outstanding usher, let me tell you. Very personable. Yeah.
How many people told us to take our warm or cold weather back with us when it was 40 degrees and they're all wearing, coats and blankets?
Yeah, we got
and
one of those.
We're kind of used to that stuff. But Dad and I were talking at a restaurant, and we had people, it wasn't even in Baton Rouge, we had people come up to us, and, he said, I kind of think this must be what a celebrity feels like, because everywhere we were, the Bass Pro, we had three or four people come up to us, asking us about, baseball, and, oh, you got a really good program. I think they might have underestimated us a little bit, being from the north. They were very complimentary, the young pitchers were really good, but just the people were awesome. I mean, unless you were here, you can't really describe it. I'm trying, but I'm not doing it justice. But so yeah, my favorite thing of the box and just the people of New Orleans and Baton Rouge. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was special, very special.
Yeah. For me, it was it was just a visual extravaganza. Everywhere you went, you had good views of everything, even the sky and everything around it just looked beautiful. You could just snap pictures, and they all looked like they were taken by a professional photographer, just the way everything was set up. You had the two different scoreboards where you could see the lineups and where you were in the lineups. Yeah, I really cool. liked that.
Awesome.
And you usually only see that in a professional type situation. Right.
Yep. And that's a good point. The double scoreboard was big.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was another big piece of that. Okay, we've got a couple questions from Brent. Chris, I'll give this one to you. Where does the box rank on stadiums you have attended?
All right. Thanks for the question, Brent. For me, I've been to a lot of different stadiums in the pros. Haven't been to very many college stadiums. Actually, you know, Memphis was last year's opening day trip was one of my first. I think it was my first road stadium to go to. But if you're comparing it to pro stadiums that I've been to with Wrigley and Fenway, I know this seems like a weird one to bring up on a baseball podcast, but the craziest environment in a stadium that I've ever been at was Virginia Tech versus Boston College football on a Thursday night in Blacksburg. My brother went to Boston College for his undergrad before he went to IU for master's, and I met him out there. And let's just say it's a little crazy when Sandman goes on and the guys take the field. The Thursday night in Blacksburg, I don't know if it is anymore. This was when Matt Ryan was playing there, and the Hokies were like number two in the country. It was craziness. And old ladies are jumping up and down. Like grandmas are jumping up and down. And the place was so loud. So to compare it to that, I can't. But as far as a baseball environment, it had an old school feel to it. Baseball wise, my favorite is Wrigley that I've been to. The old Wrigley, though, when I went in like 06, before they renovated, before the big video boards, before all the stuff, you know, before they even were doing contests, like all you heard was the organ, you saw no ads. That Wrigley was my favorite because I really liked the old school feel. And the box had an old school feel too. I got to tell you, it's going to be hard to beat as far as going on a road series. It's way up there. It's way up there as far as bucket list stadiums. And just real grateful to be able to do this trip with you guys. And you know, and thank whoever possibly might have got this on the schedule.
Yep. Josh, we got another one from Chris. Which newcomer for the Hoosiers impressed you the most?
I'm going to say Hunter Jesse was one. I've got two guys I'm going to talk about, but he was 2-for-4 with a triple and 2 runs scored in the game we won. It was he kind of got thrust into the lineup, as did a couple of other guys due to the injury on the first game. So he stepped up and looked really good. And then my other is going to be Colin Hopkins. He was terrific behind the plate. Another thing that I missed talking about with the hospitality, one of the LSU guys bought a ticket, went on StubHub and bought a ticket behind the plate so we could rotate through just to have a good seat. And so I got to spend a few innings behind the plate when Colin was back there, and he was outstanding. The balls were hitting and skipping, and I don't remember seeing one get by him, at least when I was sitting back there, but that was really impressive to see him behind the plate. So, yeah, my two newcomers that I'm most impressed with right now are Hunter Jesse and Colin Hopkins.
All right. Well, now is the part of the show in which I get to explain the egg that's on my face after my predictions from last week's podcast. Well, let's just say that I assume no liability for any gambling losses based on these predictions. Michigan defeated Vanderbilt and Arizona State for a fantastic 3-1 record at the MLB 4 event. Baseball America rewarded them today with the first ever number one ranking in the nation for a Big Ten team. The rest of the mainstream media didn't push things anywhere near that far. They moved the Wolverines into the latter half of the top 10. The consensus, though, is that Michigan is pretty well reloaded and that they're for real again. And guess where Michigan's going to be playing later this year. We will see Michigan at the BART. Minnesota had a mixed weekend. They went 2-2. I think the verdict is still out on the Gophers, and of course we're talking about one weekend, and this is baseball, and it's going to take a month worth of baseball before we can get a really, really good picture at how some of these other teams are doing. Cassidy now, what stats are you looking at from these from this series?
Yeah, so it's kind of hard the first weekend to really dig into stats because everything is just small numbers and everything is very flexible in the first couple weeks of the season. But there were two things that really stood out to me while watching the games that I really dug into a bit. The first thing was, and it's one of the things I mentioned in the preview pod that I was interested in, was strikeouts. I kind of did a quick peek thinking back to the Tennessee series last year, which was kind of the first big opponent that the Hoosiers faced. In that series against Tennessee, IU struck out 46 times, which is a lot. That was 44% of all of the plate appearances. That is a ton. Against LSU this weekend, just 27 strikeouts. That's just over half. And compared to Tennessee, and that was 23% of all plate appearances. That is a much, much, much better number. And one of the things that stood out to me the most with the strikeouts themselves, only one strikeout this entire weekend started with a 2-0 or a 2-1 count. So these guys, when they got those 2-0, 2-1, they were at least putting it into play, or they were walking or getting hit or something like that. Against Tennessee last year, there were 13 of those 2-0, 2-1 counts that eventually became strikeouts. As far as kind of a strikeouts per inning thing, there were 7 innings against LSU that had 2 or more strikeouts, which was 26% of all innings. Against Tennessee last year, it was 52% of all innings had 2 or more strikeouts. And it gets even better for the 3-plus strikeout innings. There were only 2 of those innings against LSU with all of those big arms they were throwing. There were only 2 innings where all 3 outs were strikeouts. And that compares to 6 innings against Tennessee. So it really was a big improvement on just the number of strikeouts. Now, there was a little bit of issue with when those strikeouts happened this time around. A lot more of those strikeouts happened with runners on and with runners in scoring position. So there weren't as many strikeouts, but they were at worse times in the game. And that really came into play in the second game, the first game of the doubleheader. A little odd thing I found was that all 27 of the strikeouts were against right-handed pitchers. There was no strikeout against a left-handed pitcher. But 86% of all the plate appearances were against right-handed pitchers. There were only 17 plate appearances against lefties, so that kind of makes sense. The other thing that really stood out while we were watching the games and we chatted about it a little bit was the plate discipline. These guys were working long at bats, they were taking pitches, they were fouling them off, they were getting the pitch that they wanted. And when I dug into the numbers, there were a few individual performances that stood out. Let's see. Drew Ashley in game 1 saw 5 pitches per plate appearance, which is on the high side for an individual game. Jeremy Houston, game 1, saw 5.7 pitches per plate appearance. The one that threw me off that I didn't realize until I really dug into it, Ethan Verkrumba. He, in game 2, he saw 6 pitches per plate appearance, which is actually pretty nuts. If you're getting to 5, that's a lot. If you're anywhere over 5, that gets really big.
Second game ever, too.
Yeah, second game ever. So that was really impressive. And he actually saw a lot in general. He was really working his counts.
With his speed.
With, oh, yeah.
Being able to work counts like that and see that many pitches,
oh, yeah.
That's going to be a big deal.
And especially when he, because there were multiple instances where he was able to put the ball in play,
yep.
Make them make the play, and they didn't. And
well, he got the ump to try to help us.
Well, that would be nice, too.
That was awesome, though.
Yes.
Hey, listen, he tried. The replay overturned it, though.
Yep.
It happens.
But the big one all weekend was actually Cole Barr. He saw 4.6 pitches per plate appearance for the entire weekend. And in game 3 alone, he actually saw 28 pitches. anytime you're getting over 20 pitches a game for a regulation game is really, really good. It's rare to get more than 25 in a regulation. So 28 pitches over 5 plate appearances is really, really, really good. For reference,
and he hit the scoreboard.
He did hit the scoreboard.
So you got both of those good things for Cole Ball.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And for a reference, just for that number of pitches per plate appearance, Logan Sours in 2018, for the full season, was at 4.2 pitches per plate appearance. And Cole was at 4.6 for this weekend. So he was seeing pitches, and that was really, really good to see.
Played a good third base, too. He had a good weekend. He didn't win any red belts or whatever, but Cole Barr had a really good weekend.
He was very impressive. At
the right?
Point. Yeah. And coach specifically cited Barr for a big reason. Hitting after Richardson was a big help to Richardson.
Yeah.
So
got him a lot of pitches to hit.
Well, both Cassidy and Josh have talked about how great the hospitality was this weekend. Now, we've been anxious for months to see this team. And not just for the chance to go to this environment and see them play in a big environment, you know, but also we just wanted to see what this Hoosier team was made of, what they would do when they faced some sort of real competition. Mm-hmm. So we'll start off with Josh. Josh, what did you learn about this Hoosier baseball team this weekend?
Well, I think I was kind of nervous to see if they would get overwhelmed in the moment of making a trip down to a power school that's been outside when we've been inside. One of the northern team's problems is that we don't get out. Okay, so we're going to go down here to LSU and open a season up, and we usually... We have a tendency to start slow due to the fact that we're playing catch-up as a northern team. And after the first game, with some of the errors that I saw, I kind of thought, oh, you know, I was pretty certain that coach would have them prepared mentally, but I was kind of like, eh. But I'm going to tell you what, by the end of the weekend, that second game was very winnable. And that third game they ended up winning. I saw a team that showed that they could compete at a high level against any program probably in the country. They were not outmatched or outclassed in any way, shape, or form. I think we probably had the best player on the field this weekend. And they, you know, they get all the high-end recruiting classes, but Grant was the best guy out there, period, all weekend.
Offense or defense?
Yep. Period. I'm talking all around. The best athlete on the field was on IU.
The Grant Richardson show. That's what it was.
So, yeah, I'm very encouraged to see, you know, their recruiting classes are better, of course. But our staff has them ready to go and compete against these guys. So that's a big deal to me. So that's my takeaway.
Chris, what did you learn from this weekend?
For me, it was the poise of the pitching staff. I know there were some home runs, and you know, we gave up, five runs here and then seven. But there wasn't like that inning that just got completely out of hand. You know, everything was, okay, next. They compartmentalized it, I feel like. Okay, this happened, now we're going to do this. Okay, that happened, just get back, you know, clear the mechanism, whatever, like the movie. Just go right back. Yep. No innings really, and there was plenty of innings I feel like that could have. You know, you give up a bomb, you get rattled. A guy makes an error, you get rattled. Should have turned two, you get rattled. I mean, from freshmen all the way up to, I mean, it didn't matter who was on the mound. I really liked the poise in the environment. Again, with the environment, could have been a little rougher. If the weather was warmer, if it was a Valentine's Day, sure. It still was an environment that we're not really used to. And the poise of the staff, I really liked. Again, you really could get out of hand. Innings can just snowball on you, especially in an environment when the crowd is all over you. And it never happened. It never did. I kind of was waiting for one. Like, okay, this will be the inning.
Right. Yeah.
It never happened. I mean, you're saying who was the best player on the field? It definitely was Grant Richardson. But if you didn't know the rankings, would you have known that they were 11 and were unranked 6th in the Big Ten?
No.
I don't think so.
No way. Not at all.
That's it.
Cassidy.
For me, a very big question mark coming into this was defensive catching. I mean, we talked about it during the trip. We went all the way through the lineup. Josh Fegley, Wes Wilson, Kyle Schwarber, Brad Hartong, Ryan Feynman. I mean, we have had a an unbelievable line of catchers over the last decade. It has been nuts, the level of catching that we've had. And for me, that question mark really was answered this weekend. Colin Hopkins was great behind the dish. I even remember he made one stop, and what impressed me the most, this was a stop that didn't matter. There was nobody on base at all, and he did what essentially looked like a breakdance move to block this ball when it didn't matter. That impressed me so much. And then on the other end, to have Drew Ashley, who was more than capable of spelling him for, what, six innings in a doubleheader, and honestly probably could have gone the whole game without a problem. Even the commentators on SEC Plus, what they call him, a shutdown catcher.
So they were like, oh, it's good when you can have a shutdown catcher.
Right. Who also plays second base and outfield.
And hit the ball wherever he wants. Right. And bunt and hit and run. And
so having that question mark answered on the catching, that's
when
really
he backed
what
up the play,
away.
Remember?
Oh, yeah. That
was cool.
One.
Yeah. That was like a baseball brain in full effect,
yep.
Right?
Yep. He on what ended up being an overthrow to first.
It was a fly out to Richardson.
Yep.
Sack fly. The guy didn't take up. He was flying back. Yep. Grant tried to throw him out on the run back to first, and he overthrew him.
Yep.
And Ashley knew exactly where to be if the throw was overthrown.
Yep.
And it was overthrown, and he was there to back it up.
Yeah.
And he didn't just randomly run up the first baseline like some catchers do.
No,
he ran
exactly
to the spot
where
it would need to be, and it ended up right there.
Yeah.
Me and Cass were like, how did he? What?
Yeah. Yeah.
High baseball IQ.
It really was.
Yep.
It really was.
Yep.
It was really cool. Shutdown catcher.
Yep.
Yep. For me, it was the variety of pitches that the hitters were able to attack. Mm-hmm. You had an offense that was built and designed to attack fastballs last year. And a lot of that led to the two big stats we knew about, strikeouts and home runs. But this team today, or this weekend, seemed to have no problem in, while they may have been looking fastball, they were able to adjust and make good solid contact on off-speed pitches. And I think that's very important because it'll prevent, kind of like what happened last year with Minnesota, where they sort of targeted the team and just said, hey, we're going to throw 80% breaking pitches that you're not comfortable with. Well, guess what? This team looks like a team that's going to crush those pitches. Mm-hmm. So that takes a strategic weapon out of the hands of the other team. And I think makes this team much more deadly offensively, which I think has got to be really scary for anybody else we play, particularly anybody in the Big Ten. Chris, what do the Hoosiers have in store this weekend?
All right, Carl, this weekend's much different. We're not going to the box. We're going to the South Alabama Invitational. It's in Mobile, Alabama. We're playing three teams. On Friday at 1 o'clock, we're playing the UT Martin Skyhawks, Tennessee Martin Skyhawks, RPI 201 last year. They were 25-31, which is the most wins they ever had. But again, competition's a little bit down from the 11th team in the country. Then on Saturday, fair warning, if you have a honeydew list, take care of it on Sunday. Because Saturday morning's the big game this weekend. South Alabama Jaguars, they were 30-26 last year. RPI 104. They did not make the tournament last year. They are predicted to this year. They have two preseason All-Americans, Drake Nightingale, Ethan Wilson. They took two out of three from the Campbell Camels last weekend. They're the team that took Michigan to the end of the regional final last year. So this is a quality, quality team. We'll be playing them once in their house. RPI road win, possibility for us. Then on Sunday, the Siena Saints. They're from upstate New York, so we cannot sleep on them because they're from the East Coast, of course. But their RPI last year was 246, and they were 18-33. So big pressure game Saturday, business games Friday and Sunday. Much different, but you know what? It could be a little bit of a letdown from going to the box to going to this Mobile, Alabama tournament, but a good team doesn't let that bother them. We go in there, no, two out of three at minimum. Let's get the sweep and the resume builder win.
Excellent. Well, that will do it for this road edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CU at the BART and at iubase17. For Josh Bennett, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Carl James. See you at the bar. For Josh Finney,
Chris Bennett, and Cass James, I'm Carl Palmer.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Keep that in.
That has to go somewhere.